This is Greg Corumbus of Radio America reporting for WorldNet Daily. My guest at this time is Andrew Breitbart. He is the author of the brand new book, Righteous Indignation, Excuse Me While I Save the World. You may know him also from his websites, Breitbart.com, Breitbart TV, BigGovernment.com, Big Hollywood, Big Journalism, and Big Peace. And he says there are more to come. We're talking about his book and mainly his assessment of the mainstream media, or as he calls it, the complex. And Andrew, thanks so much for being with us.
Yeah, I call it the Democrat media complex because I was kind of caught up in this matrix as a child. I call myself in the book a default liberal, growing up in Brentwood, going to a prep school in West Los Angeles with the studio executive's kids, watching MTV, reading Rolling Stone and Spin magazine. I didn't even have the offering of what a conservative, what it was. I really didn't know what it was. And then as I graduated college with less skills than when I entered, with basically a major in nihilism and hatred of the United States, I realized I had to get a real job. And the juxtaposition of working and the self-esteem that I got from working compared to, what I was getting from the mainstream media and my academic background, which was nihilism, I opted for conservatism, and I wondered how it was that I was this way and so many of my friends were nihilistic, liberal, leftist, hate America types. And it was because the default culture is left culture, and it's done through the mainstream media. It's done through Hollywood. It's done through ABC, CBS, NBC. And I don't even think these people realize that they're default liberals. They think they're objective oftentimes, but in fact they're not. And my battle with new media is to correct that, to at least offer an alternative to the Democrat media complex.
And one of the things I think even a lot of conservatives still believe, at least to some extent, is that, yes, all these institutions are liberal, but it's just a matter of that's the way they kind of formed. It just so happens that liberals populate the major news media, Hollywood, and so forth. You point out in the book that there is a very well-orchestrated effort here by all these institutions that whenever there's an issue that threatens a prominent Democrat, or potentially there's blood in the water for a prominent conservative, there's a very coercive, a very choreographed effort here.
Well, absolutely. I mean, yeah. This didn't benefit me to switch from the left to the right. It hurts, you know, within the ranks of family members and friends. Why would I or David Mamet or Dennis Miller notice the Democrat media complex ourselves? But at the end of the day, it is what it is. It is an organic, it is a very organic conspiracy. The left realized that it was having a hard time making the argument in a country that had such a strong middle class that, to create a haves versus have-nots argument. But the cultural left created political correctness and multiculturalism, which created an us versus them, pitting blacks against whites, oppressor versus the oppressed. And that's what we have now in the media, is a lot of journalists who claim to be objective, whose goal is to push for social justice and economic justice, which at the end of the day is splitting our country based upon blood, based upon sexual orientation. And that's why you find when conservatives in the media go up against big government, when you say, I want fiscal restraint, the first response of the cultural leftists in the Democrat media complex is to accuse everybody of being a racist, because that's how they've been trained in academia, and it's been reinforced in media. If you disagree with the Democratic Party on any point of substance, you're called a racist. This is cultural Marxist, and it must be defeated.
There was kind of an epiphany for you. You talk about it in the book where for a little while, as your career was beginning to grow, you would go on, try to make nice with liberals while trying to make your point. And eventually you talk about a point where you were on the Bill Maher show where eventually you just said, I just got to get the truth out there. I'm not here to make people laugh. I'm here to make a point. If I can make them laugh at the same time, that's great. But mainly it's just going out there, throwing out the truth and making sure that your message gets out regardless of just how entertaining it is. How important was that?
Well, I mean, there isn't a person in the world that goes on the Bill Maher show with an audience there and millions of people watching doesn't think, oh, I hope my ex-girlfriend doesn't see me and I hope I come across as charming. And the first time that I did that, people afterwards said, hey, you did great on the show. You got a couple laughs. And then I went out to lunch with a friend by the name of Richard Pera, and he bluntly said, yeah, you were really good, but why didn't you stand up for what you believed in? And it was 2 years of me, that gnawing at me, even waking up in the middle of the night, almost in like a fear. I'm like, how, that guy really captured, you know, my mistake there. And I was given the opportunity to come on 2 years later, and I stood off to the side, like it was like the beginning of the Super Bowl, and I sat down, and I kept thinking to myself, fight for what you believe in, fight for what you believe in. And in the first, 10 minutes, it was like the opening round of a Mike Tyson fight, and Professor Michael Eric Dyson in the audience ganged up on me and just pummeled me, and I just kept fighting back, defending Rush Limbaugh, you know, when they called him a racist, all their sneers, insinuating that I was a racist, the typical leftist default position. You're a racist. Everyone's a racist. Clarence Thomas is an Uncle Tom. And I fought and I fought and I fought, and I got off stage, went to my green room, and my wife and my family was there, and they looked like they had, they looked like they were in a funeral. And I walked in and I said, why do you guys look so glum? And they said, we are so sorry. They thought it was the worst thing that they'd ever seen. The audience booed. Sarah Silverman sat in my chair afterwards and wiped off the seats and looked at the camera and said, slimy. Everything that could go wrong did go wrong. And I looked at my family and I said, you don't understand. This is the first day of the rest of my life. I want to go back for more. And I kind of call it the Coulter threshold. You always wonder when you see Ann Coulter on TV and she's laughing while they're attacking her, is that that which doesn't kill you makes you really strong. And you realize, wow, I gained a greater power. I didn't feel bad about it. I felt good about it. And now every time that Air America type shows or MSNBC calls me up, I'm looking to go back there into that fight, because I know that even if they try to pummel me, I'm just going to stand up for what I believe in. It's probably the most important message that I put in Righteous Indignation, is to stand up for what you believe in and to go into the lion's den.
There's also a very interesting chapter in here, what you call your pragmatic primer, 13 ways to confront and take down liberal arguments. What do you want folks to know, most importantly, when they go into these battles? On the one hand, you're saying be bold, have the truth. On the other hand, make sure that if you have any skeletons, they're out there, and don't try to act like you know more than you do. So there's kind of a balancing act, it seems like.
Well, it is. I mean, and it's complex, because the Alinsky rules exist in the realm where there is no objective morality and there's moral relativism. I'm not telling you to take Alinsky's rules and to do them. I'm just saying, have courage, stand up for what you believe in. You remember when Barack Obama said that he did cocaine early in his life? Don't be worried about your background if you did something wrong. Own up to it. Admit to it. People, the conservative movement acts like it's a country club or a Manhattan co-op, making sure that everybody within its midst, you know, it passes certain tests, purity tests. The Tea Party has been the most potent thing that's happened to the conservative movement ever, and it's filled with people who are just average Americans. It's why Sarah Palin resonates with people, those that see that, you know, that she's attacked by the establishment. She goes out there, she goes into the lion's den, she's honest about who she is, and that resonates with people more than the establishment class that plays by Marcus of Queensbury rules.
Well, it's a fascinating read, and you can learn more about how Mr. Breitbart helped to implode Acorn through all those undercover videos. Also, a part biography and part, again, primer on how to take on the liberal establishment and the complex Democratic media. Andrew, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you very much.
Andrew Breitbart is the author of Righteous Indignation, Excuse Me While I Save the World. He's also behind the websites Breitbart.com, Breitbart.tv, as well as the Big Government, Big Hollywood, Big Journalism websites, and many more to come. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WorldNet Daily.